Hello in Na'ala Land. Today's class will be devoted to Tisha B'Av and also somewhat connected to the 3 weeks. And we focus upon what is it that we're mourning for and how great and immense our loss is and how much we need to have it rectified. Today's class is always is Lili Nishmas Rachalei Abbas Rav Chaim Tzvi Aleiha Shalom. And those of you who were with us when we learned Zechariah, we mentioned the Gemara, we'll mention this again, the Gemara at the end of Makos, but Rav Akiva and the other Talmid Chachamim approaching Har Tzofim, they saw a jackal emerging from the base Kodesh HaKadoshim. Rav Akiva laughed and the others wept. And this is the perpetual question of Jewish history. Why do you laugh and why do you cry? The Gemara relates, Maisa Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Yeshua, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Tarfon, Shayim Asubim, Bnei Brak, Shemri Tzitz, Rabbi Kolosa, Laila, Ashabot, Amidem, Vamr Lahem, Rabbi Sen, Gizman, Kriyashma, Shashachris. These scholars were conducting a Seder in Bnei Brak all night long until Talmidim came in the morning and said, Rabbeinu, Rabbi Sen, it's time for us to say the Shema of the morning. And these scholars were engaged in erudite activity in the depths of the night, under the hill of servitude, and finally word came that the dawn has shone, the night is over, the new days are here, and a new era is embarking. The time of the darkness of the exile, that's over. It's time to say Shema. It's time to rejoice. And throughout our bitter gullus, we have this dilemma always. Do we cry or do we laugh? Let's relate the Gemara at the end of Makos. We said we learned Zechariah. Hay olam Yerushalayim. They were ascending up to Jerusalem. They came to Haratzofim. Karu bigdehem. They ripped their clothing upon seeing Jerusalem. When they arrived at Harabayis, a fox emerging from the Holy of Holies. He's playing Bochum. Weep, oyvei. A fox treads on this holy ground. That a person may not walk there, and a jackal is going there. Rabbi Kiva was laughing. He said the scholars to Rabbi Kiva, why are you laughing? Why are you crying? And the way the Chassam Sofer explains this Gemara is that no one does the fact that once matters, that matters and always once they hit rock bottom. And the Chacham believed that as atrocious as it was and appalling as it was to see a fox emerge from the Kodesh HaKadoshim, the Holy of Holies, until the Harabais was overrun by wild animals, the lions and tigers, it had yet to reach its nadir. It became a different perspective. The Gemara relates that at the time of the Roman dominion, they banned the study of Torah, teaching Torah, and Rabbi Kiva defined the ban. And this is what the Gemara says. Gazu malchus harasha shelo yasku b'Yisrael b'Torah, the Roman nation may exert that Jewish people cannot learn Torah. B'papus ben Yehuda v'mashu the Rabbi Kiva, shayim akil kilo v'habimus. And this means Rabbi Kiva said, how could you grossly violate the ban of learning, teaching Torah in public, when it's forbidden? Aren't you afraid of the kingdom? Armalahem said Rabbi Kiva, I'll give you a mashal. What is it analogous to? The ox which is going by the riverbank. And the fish are shifting from side to side. Said the fox to these fish, what are you running from? Armelos responded to the fish, Mipnei rishtos shemivim aleinu bnei adam. We're fleeing from the nets of the fishermen. That's why we keep running, scooting from side to side. Armelham ratzonachem shtalu liyabash v'nadrani v'atem kishenj daravasai imavoseichem. Said the fox to the fish, you know what? Come up on the side of the river. And we'll live together in peace and harmony, like our forefathers lived together. Why live over there where the men with the fish nets are going to catch you? Come up on the side, on the land, and we'll live in peace. Amrulah said the fish to the fox, they say about you, you are the cleverest of all the animals. You're not the cleverest, you are the stupidest, the most moronic and misleading idiot. If in a place where we can live, we have sustenance, And a fish in water, that's where we belong. We're afraid. How much more so our lives are in peril should we not go there? In other words, explains the Chassam Sofer, the fox doesn't have the ferocity or the sheer strength of the brute force of the lion or the bear, but he has this cunning mind. Hence he possesses the greatest risk and danger to the Jewish people. And this is precisely what Kiva perceived. When he saw the fox, that cunning fox, trying to take us away from our Torah, trick us, dupe us, verbal camouflage. When he saw that, he knew we've reached rock bottom. It's the fox who wants to contaminate the mind and pollute the thoughts. And that's the one that has emerged from the Holy of Holies. And this ugly fox keeps rearing its ugly head. And we have to know how to insulate ourselves from its noxious influence. And that's the very Gemara that is the preface to Rabbi Kiva's martyrology, which we read on Tisha B'Av in the Kinos of our Elvanim. B'Shach Shotzi Rabbi Kiva L'Harega M'Kriya Shema Haisa. When they brought out Rabbi Kiva to his martyrology, it was time of Kriya Shema. And they flayed off his skin with hot combs of steel. And the Kabbalah of Malchus, at that time he was accepted upon himself the yoke of heaven. And the Talmidim couldn't believe it. And Talmidim said, even at a time like this, all my life I wanted to fulfill God with all my heart, with all my soul, with all my might. Up until now I never knew, here's a chance. All my life I've been waiting for this. How could I let this opportunity pass me by? And he was, and when he says, "Makabel Malchus, Shmaya Shem Kel Shem Echad," and he prolonged the Echad, and his soul ascended to Shemayim with the word Echad, and God is one, and a voice descended from heaven. Yatzod, Shrecha Rebbe Kiva, happy are you, Ashrecha Rebbe Kiva, Shiyatzod Shmascha BeEchad, that you left this world on one, that God is one, Ashrecha, you left your soul left you on one. The story was a miser who was extremely, extreme miser, and he rented a hovel to a widow. And he's on his deathbed now, this miser, and he asked the miser, summoned because he claimed that she owed him on rent 2 rubles. This poor widow all by herself. She said, "No, it's not true. I owe you 1 ruble. I don't have it now, and I'll pay you that ruble. But I don't owe you 2. He said, "No, you owe me 2, and I want the full payment. Don't try and get away with 1, you owe me 2. He said, "No, but it's only 1 that I owe. No, you owe me 2. He said, "I'm telling you, I only owe you 1. I'm telling you, 1. It's 2, that's what you have to pay, or I'll evict you. But I only owe you 1. And he was on his deathbed, and he had no more strength, and he couldn't talk, and he said, "Sibling." He was just a kid. And then he died. The next thing in the newspapers, they wrote that Rabbi Kiva died on 1, and this miser died on 2. When you hear this, you don't know if you should cry or take a Rabbi Kiviesque approach and laugh. Look how far this fox is corrupted. Look how much people are absorbed with money. Thinking, from here, only things can get better. We are less afraid of Khmelnytsky and the pogroms and the terrorists than we are afraid of the fox, who employ every single philosophy and enticement to pull the fish out of water. Because once you take that fish out of water and you deprive a Jew of his Torah nourishment, then nothing Jewish remains. And that's the contemporaneous churban of today. That also we have to mourn on the period of Tisha B'Av. The community of Worms, Germany, was destroyed 2 times during the Crusades. And the Sma writes that the reason for this was because when Ezra wrote to all the communities of Vermeiza to return to Eretz Yisrael, they responded, "Shalom Alech Ezra, greetings to you, Ezra. But we have our own base in Mikdash of Yerushalayim HaKatan, the small Jerusalem, but we should have success in the big Yerushalayim with the base of Mikdash. But we're content over here with our Yerushalayim HaKatan of Worms." And for that, they were attacked 2 times. Unbelievable suffering. I described what those crusaders did to them. It's as horrible as any horrible thing you've heard about the Holocaust. I took the pregnant women, threw them in the air, and had them fall upon, impaled upon swords. The Medrash relates that Yirmiyah cried during the day, and Klaisel cried during the night. And Hashem cried during the day and during the night. The crying for the Beis HaMikdash assumes two forms. There's crying during the day, when there's lucidity and clarity, and there's a keen intellectual comprehension of what is missing, of what was and what will be, but that's currently lacking. On the other hand, there's also the crying that's referred to as crying of the night, and only Klai Yisrael is on that level. They lost sight of what was and their former glory and what was missing. They cried at night, because at night things are dark. It's foggy. It's not clear. They didn't have the clarity and lucidity of the day. All they felt was the pain. And intellectually, they couldn't comprehend what was missing, what was wrong. Albeit their hearts told them something was very severely amiss. But God cried day and night, for He surely knows what is missing. Imo anochi v'tzara. And on Tisha B'Av night, we cry the cry of the heart, B'chol tivkeh b'layla. But on the day of Tisha B'Av, it's the critical cry of the mind which sees clearly. It's not an emotion, there's clarity, it's cognitive. This understanding provides new insight into the words of the Gemara, Kolam is Abel an Yishalayim Zocha B'Roeh B'Simchasa. Whoever mourns over Jerusalem will be Zocha, will be merit to see its restoration and its joy. It doesn't say Yizkev, will in the future tense, will see and be privileged to see, but rather employs the present tense, Roeh, like the expression Roeh Nistavarecha. It's the current tense, the present tense. For the purpose of the Avelis is to recognize what could be despite what there is now. We are expected to have a certain modicum of, to be a visionary. Picture a story I told you in the past about the Panovitcher Rav, who was dreaming. Yes, I'm dreaming, but my eyes are open. He's able to see in the present. And he would always speak about the Shiva, even when it was being constructed, the Panovitcher Shiva, in the present tense. He would say to people, can you hear it? Can you hear the Kol Torah? They're building a building. He could already hear. He could see it in the future for him was in the present. Zocha v'roeh, in the present tense. We want to rejoice in the present tense over the restoration of Jerusalem. Now, we all know that the Bayis Rishon was destroyed because of Zorah, Gila, Raish, because of these cardinal crimes of murder, sexual crimes, and idolatry. And there's no more appropriate day than this period to strengthen ourselves to the antidotes we said last time. And we'll just quickly summarize that regarding Avodah Zarah, to strengthen our faith of Hashem, Hu Elokim, Ve'ein Od Milvado, there's none but God. Regarding Gilei Arayos, the illicit sexual crimes, to maintain our tznius, our modesty in thought, deed, and action. Regarding Shvichas Damim, we have to regard our health and the health of others. We mentioned last time smoking and driving. It's really amazing with the car. You can, Mefirta Malach HaMavis B'Yadayim, you have a lethal weapon in your hands. Now, Bayis Sheni was destroyed because of Sinas Chinam. And last time I told you I feel very uncomfortable giving Musar. And I'm just going to quickly, more or less, gloss over this. I try not to speak about the Sinas Chinam because it's spoken about by most speakers, people more competent and wiser than I. But I don't know if I've fulfilled my shlichus, and if I'm being delinquent in my shlichus, if I don't address this most burning of all problems. There is no camp among our people that is free from this problem of a baseless hatred, needless hatred, from left to right, and every stripe needs to be strengthened in this regard. Now, regarding the Sinas Chinam, the way to rectify the Avos Yisrael is through Chesed and Tzedakah. Another thing we mentioned before is Noas Devarim, the painful words that sealed the fates of the Churban HaBayis. Yerushalayim was destroyed because of Kamsa and Bar Kamsa. And here we can mention the very interesting insight of Chaim Shmulevitz. Jerusalem was destroyed to the story of Kamsa and Bar Kamsa. I assume most of you in the audience are familiar with this. There was a party, and a fellow invited his dear friend Kamsa to the party, sent his messenger. But the messenger got mistaken. Instead of inviting his friend Kamsa, he went and invited his arch-enemy, Bar Kamsa. He meant to invite Perlman, by mistake he invited Perlstein. Perlman he loved, Perlstein he despises. So, what happened? Everyone knew that this was a very, very prestigious party, and Bar Kamsa felt very bad that he'd be left out of it, but he knew that the host didn't like him. And then when the messenger came and said, you're invited to the party, he was so happy. He rejoiced so much. Now I can also be part of the glory. Everyone attending the party, he was so excited. He goes there, and when the host sees his enemy there, he says, get out of here! What are you doing here? He says, but I was invited. You're not invited. I don't want you. My party. Leave. Oh, please, leave. So, please, I'll pay for everything I eat. I want you out of here. please, please, I'll pay for everything. I'll pay for half of the proceeds. Just leave now, leave now. And here he was publicly shamed, and no one spoke up. And this is what Chaim Shmuelitz asked. He said like this, Yishalayim, the Gemara Gittin was Necher because of Kamsa Bar Kamsa, because of Kamsa Bar Kamsa. But why did he say Yishalayim is Necher because of Kamsa Bar Kamsa? Yishalayim is Necher because of Bar Kamsa. What do you want from Kamsa? Kamsa didn't know about the party. He didn't get the invitation. So Chaim Shmuelitz, that's why he says Kamsa Bar Kamsa. If your friend makes a party, don't stand on your laurels and don't wait for an invitation. Just go. Happens all the time. People said, you know, I wasn't invited. I travel overseas very often. And I'll discover that a student of mine has a wedding or an invite or some kind of a celebration. I always go and say, ah, you weren't invited. I don't go to eat. I go to dance. I go to celebrate. And I never, ever had the feeling that my presence there was not appreciated. Chaim Shmuelitz really taught us you have to share the joy of some chalila, share the misfortune. I think we might have mentioned on a different occasion how when I was a bachur in the mirror, there was a fellow, big Talmid Chacham, who was struck low end with a terrible disease. Then he passed away. We were devastated. He had little Pitzalach children. And as he was being laid into the ground in Har Zeisim, Chaim Shmuelitz stood up on a boulder and he announced that so-and-so is being wed tonight. Everyone's to go to the wedding and dance. We had as much cheshek to dance at that wedding as I have to be a ballerina dancer. He said, why should someone lose out just because someone died today? And everyone went that night and they danced their heads off. And he really taught us what it means to share someone's joy and chalila share their misfortune. In the day of my day in the mirror, in the time of Chaim Shmuelitz, it was customary to invite everyone to the chasana. You went from and now today there's over 6,000 people, but you went from bench to bench, told everyone to come, and people came, big Talmid Chacham would come there and join in the dancing. You share the joy in chalila, you share the misfortune. That's the lesson of Kamsa Bar Kamsa. And these little gestures make such a difference in this bias-deprived world. Simcha Wasserman, the only surviving child of Rav Chanan Wasserman Zatzal, the most important Rosh Yeshiva murdered in the Holocaust, the Talmud Muvuk, the Chafetz Chaim, Simcha Wasserman, went to Los Angeles to teach, very remarkable, that in the 70, late 60s and 70s, even though there was a thriving, flourishing Jewish community in Los Angeles, Mechanchim were reluctant to go there because they felt it was a too decadent a place to raise children at that time. Simcha Wasserman tragically had no children, so he and his reps went out there and made a very profound impact on the Angelino community. And he, at the end of his life, lived in Yerushalayim in Matusdorf. He had a remarkable Shabbos table. All kinds of people came there. And one Shabbos, he asked the guests to introduce themselves. Four fellows sitting around the table, not people that were not religious. So Gary said that he was a banker, and Larry said that he was a wholesaler, and Barry said that he was a stockbroker, and then came to Harry. Harry said that he was a longshoreman, he was a dock worker, and all of a sudden there's this pregnant pause, a very awkward silence. Now you have to realize there is nothing wrong with being a longshoreman or a dock worker. As a matter of fact, in Saloniki, the great Jewish community of Saloniki of Greece, prior to World War II, everyone knew that from Friday afternoon to Saturday night, you couldn't dock a boat in this important port because all the dock workers and schleppers and importers were all Shomer Shabbos. The port closed from Friday afternoon to Motzei Shabbos. But today, it's just not a profession commonly associated with Jews. And there's this awkwardness in the room when he said he's a dock worker. Some Wasserman on the spot said, ah, look how much we share in common. I'm also a Wasserman. I'm also a water person. You and I, looking for Sharon Kamen. That ability to just spare someone who knows the Varim. I was at a teacher's meeting, even though I'm very dear to the person, I don't want to say the name. Teaching one of the seminaries, where I teach a very prominent seminary. And it's a large seminary, it's part of a larger school for Israelis. And at the teacher's meeting, at the beginning of the year, and this is one school, you really have to go to the teacher's meeting. So what happened, it's such a large staff, I would guesstimate there's at least 60 people there at the teacher's meeting. And not everyone knows everyone, because some people teach at night, some people teach in the morning, some people it's different classes. So the director of the program, whose name I'm keeping anonymous, asked everyone to please state your name as we went around the room and what you teach. Now in the room there were scholars, Talmid Chachamim, and even the head of the school, who was a very venerable person, probably in his 70s, big Talmid Chacham. And there was all these scholars and teachers and Morot, who have been teaching many years, and then there's a few rookies, meaning these are girls that graduated the seminary and they're already part of the staff. And obviously they feel very uncomfortable. They're big teachers which have taught them, and accomplished people are saying who they are, and then these are young Vaibhals, that they're 20 years old, 21 years old. So Rabbi says, my name is Rabbi Schwartz, I teach Tanakh. And my name is Rabbi Levi, and I teach Chumash. And my name is Rabbi Stein, and I teach Halacha. And finally came to these two young girls, very young girls, and one girl went, and she just couldn't open her mouth, couldn't say a word. The words wouldn't come out. She couldn't say a word. And the head of the school went right away. He said, and this is, I'm just making it, Chavi Weingarten was teaching Nashim B'Tanach, went right on to the next one. It was seamless. He just did it so beautifully. And I heard the Malachim singing. He saved a woman from shame, from Anos Devarim. He saved her. It was beautiful. And it was so seamless. I don't think everyone in the room even realized what happened. He did it in such a seamless fashion. And this we have to work on. I can give you many examples. I think we have a work cut out for us. So this is what the Gemara says. They said, Akiva Nichamtanu, Akiva Nichamtanu. You have consolers of Akiva. We looked for a time there would be no more fox, no more suffering, no more Shechinta B'Galusa, that God will no longer despise our service, but Adarabba, he'll dispatch his faithful servant to announce one final time, Nachamu, Nachamu Ami, and really take the heart not to engage in the Onos, the Varim, to hurt people, cause them hurt. I heard a story, we tell the story in our family often about, maybe a story was told, we saw Salanter, that there was a cobbler who had but one daughter, an only child, and he saved all his money because he's an only child, and I think she was also a yesoma from his wife. And he felt this one girl, she had a hard life, she deserved to have a beautiful wedding. He saved his money, and there were two halls in town. The wealthy used one hall, and the poor people used the other hall. And he saved enough money he could use the fancy hall. And the rich people in town were offended that this poor cobbler, this poor shoemaker, was using the fancy hall. So as he's walking his daughter down to the chuppah, so the rich man held up their shoes and said, could you fix this for us? Put him back in his place. That shame, that anos devarim. That's what we went through. We went to have a day where it's Akiva Nechamtanu, Asalas. Okay. Now let's just focus exclusively on Tisha B'Av. It has within it the seeds of all the suffering and destruction of Klal Yisrael. And many a time we can look at the fruit and we better understand the seed. We connect the fruit to the seed, then it has all that more meaning. The Pasuk says in Micha, of course, that's from Treyasar. Atis mechi yavti li ki nafalti kamti ka ashev bechoshech Hashem orli. And the Medrash says, don't rejoice upon me, because I, even though I fell, I shall yet arise. And the Medrash says, lulei nafalti lo kamti, lulei yashavti bechoshech Hashem lo haya orli. If I would not have fallen, I'd not be able to rise. If I would not have sat in the darkness, then God would not be my light. Said Rav Chaim Shulevitz that one who falls can rise to heights unrivaled by those who have not fallen. In the Falti Kamti, if I wouldn't fall, I wouldn't rise. And on Tisha B'Av, we are commemorating a tremendous fall. But this could be a springboard to a tremendous rise. Chaim Shulevitz proves his point, always by marshaling Chazal, and tells the story from the Churban that the Babylonians took two young men, and they demanded from them that they take the treasure out of the Beis HaMikdash. They said, you go first. They'd already captured the bayis. They said, you go into the Beis HaMikdash, you go to the Kodesh HaKadoshim, you go inside to the Holy Chamber, you go inside the Mikdash. They figured, listen, they didn't know what's valuable. They figured whatever they'll take, you take whatever you want, it's yours. They'll know what's important. You go first, whatever you take, it's yours. We'll take the rest. Because they figured the Jews will know what's valuable. So the first man went in, he took out the menorah. And he said, okay, I'm taking this. It was pure gold, a menorah, miksha achas, one piece of gold. You take this, the rest is yours. They said, oh, no. They said, no, you're just an ordinary fellow. And this is pure gold. Put it back. And he refused. He said, I will not go back. I'm not going to go back to my synagogue. I'm not going to go over this holy soil. I angered my God once by trespassing. I shan't anger him again. They said, you must. You must go back. Our offer stands. Take whatever you want, not this, anything you want, and it's yours. He refused again. So they took boards with nails in them. They used these nails to flatten planks. And they scraped off his flesh. He screamed and he said, this is my punishment for angering God. And this Gemara is a pella. Here you have a man who's brazen enough to walk in the first time and walk out the menorah. Now, his option was the second time either be taking, have your flesh scraped off you, or take something else. He should have said, let me in there, I'll get you something else. But what happened, he says, with Chaim Shlomo, it was nefalti kamti. He had fallen. He'd made an error, now he raised. He came to such heights that it was unrivaled. His vision was guided by the light, not perceived by ordinary people. Because he's other people, they're only seeing in the darkness. For him, it was Hashem or Li. He saw the light. And we're duty-bound to speak about the Churban, to think about the Churban, to realize, to recognize, to concentrate about what we're missing. Most speakers who speak on Tisha B'Av at this time of year, they focus on Bayis Sheni because we can more readily identify with the cause. And that's for two reasons. Firstly, because Gili Arayis Shvichos Damim of Arizara, illicit sexual crimes, murder, varazara, idolatry, these are not sins that plague our community. But sinas chinam, baseless hatred, does plague our community. Now, the first thing we're to sin regarding any of these serious cardinal crimes, varazara, gilirayas, shichadam, you wouldn't take a rocket science to realize you have a lot of tshuva to do. But if you violate the sin of sinas chinam, baseless hatred, you don't have this overwhelming sense, compelling sense that you have to do tshuva. However, if you focus upon what you lost in Bayis Rishon, if you don't focus on what we lost in Bayis Rishon, which was the Churban, then we don't come to grips with what we were missing, what we have to try and strive to replace. I'll give you an example. You tell a swinging bachelor that, you know something, you're not married. Now he knows this. He may even think about it on rare occasion. But he doesn't feel he's missing something. He likes his freestyle life. You tell a man who's a widower, who had a wonderful wife, lived together for 30 years, that, you know, you really should get remarried. That, where's your wife? You tell him this, he doesn't need any reminder. He knows what he's missing. He felt that. He loved her. So he knows what he's missing. Only if we focus on Bayis Rishon can we realize the scope of our loss and realize the constant handicaps and deficits that we live with and how we look with hope towards the future. The Gemara and the Psukim say that every stone of the Bayis was directly dictated by God. The Evan Shasiyah, the foundation stone, was the Makam Maga. That was the very focal point which God had direct contact with the world. From there, the Holy Spirit went out to the rest of the world. The Nisim of the Beis HaMikdash were manifest every day. It was open to everyone in the world. Jew and non-Jew could manifestly see all the miracles that happened. The Mizbeach, the altar, was in the Azara, in the courtyard. Everyone was open for everyone to see it. If it rained in Yerushalayim, the rain fell everywhere, but in the Makam HaMikdash, in the Holy Temple, except for where the Mikdash was. If there was a matter of serious nature, you go to the Kohen Gadol, and the letters of the Urim V'Tumim would light up with the answer. If you followed the advice of the Urim V'Tumim, you had a salvation. If you ignored them, the consequences were tragic. They may ayim of the Korban, you take out the intestines of the Korban, you toss it on the floor of the Zara, and it disappeared. It just would get absorbed into the floor. And this was a grade B miracle. For it didn't even make it into the Mishnah. And Pirkei Avos tells you all the great things that happened. Basically, a grade B miracle. As long as the Bayis Rishon was Kayim, existed, there was always a Navi. Yechezkel Navi, Yirmiyah Navi, lived through the Churban. Shai Navi lived 100 years before the Churban. And he foretold what would occur. No one could deny that there was Rabbanu Shalom. No one could deny the special relationship he had with the Jewish people. It was clear and manifest to everyone in the world that God had a special affinity for the Jewish people. And I submit to you, is that not our greatest problem today, a recognition of God's presence? We're all training the spiritual Olympics, but for the world at large, and Rahman San, many of our brothers and sisters, God is not an issue. I was born and raised in Vienna. You cannot imagine how polite, the politesse, the Viennese people. They'll do anything for you. It's just, when you go out on a date, you're not as polite as the Viennese are on a regular day. And yet, without God, look what they did. The Austrians and the Germans in World War II. We have to explain that what we're missing now is the presence of God. And that's what was the bias that made it so manifest, of God's relation to our people. We have to demonstrate to our lives is to a God in the Welt, there's a God in this world, And we have to be obsessed with this mission, Siddur Gott in the Welt. Interesting anecdote. Because I'm passionate about this, I produced a film called Do You Believe in Miracles? And people in Na'ale are somewhat familiar with this by this point. And what happened was, is that I have a very dramatic story in Na'ale. I had the following dilemma when I produced the film. The film is a Kira film. It's to make people bring God into their living room. On the other hand, the cost of producing a film is far, far greater than you could ever imagine. It's very, very serious money to make a film, and you have to then advertise and promote it and market it. Very, very serious money. And I was afraid, investing all this money, my target audience, albeit, of course, I hope to expand a little bit, my target audience are religious people. I was afraid if all the actors were not look religious, then it would alienate some of my audience, and I couldn't afford that with this kind of money being invested. On the other hand, if I have a film that's supposed to be a Kira film and every man is wearing a yarmulke, and every woman is wearing a sheitel, then how is that going to be any Kira? How could people not religious relate to it? It was really a countervailing motif and attention. And what happened was, I have a story of a couple from a halakha, I'm not going to give away the story. A remarkable, remarkable story. And these people were going to buy me credibility. They were not religious people, and they went through the Holocaust, and no one could have any problem with them. And these people not wearing a yarmulke, or her not dressed in a Torah fashion, this would do nothing I would not lose credibility, and it would enhance the appeal of the film. That was my great idea. So what happened was that when I came across the story, I was riding on a train on Valentine's Day out to Connecticut to hit up someone for some money for the film, and I saw this headline in New York Post, Valentine's Day Miracle, Holocaust Couple Love Conquers All. And so everyone on the train is reading this article, and tears were coming down their cheeks. So finally I got off the train, I picked up a paper, keep my costs down, and I read this remarkable story. So I jotted down the guy's name, where he lived in New York, and when I came in that summer to produce the film, I called him up, and I was speaking to him in Yiddish. I told him that I'm producing an educational film. I'd like to video him and his wife, interview them for the film. He said, "Was tust du? What do you do?" I said, "I'm a Schreiber, I'm an author." He said, "What are you writing? I'm a Bicher. I write books." He said, "Send me one of your books." This is in June. So I sent him a book, and I called him 2 weeks later. I said, "Very nice book. Do you have any more?" I said, "Sure." I sent him some more books. I called him back in the beginning of July. He said, "Are you ready to? Do you have any more books?" I said, "Yeah, sure." I sent him more books. It was July and beginning of August. By the end of the summer, I'd already sent him 15, 16 books. And I said, "Now can I send you pick you up and take you to the studio?" He said, "Yes, certainly." I picked him up. I said, "Shrek." There was a yarmulke on his head. I said, "Oh, yeah, yeah." I said, "What's this? Here's the guy who's going to buy me credibility. Doesn't wear a kippah." I said, "Why, what's the kippah?" He said, "I read your books. I became religious." So upset. But the idea is that to be passionate, it's through Gott in the Welt. We have a special relation with that God. In 1964, if I'm not mistaken, Pope Paul VI, as Rabbi Wein likes to call him, not one of the major tzaddikim of the world, was going to make a visit to the Holy Land. The Holy Land meant Jordan. It did not mean coming to Israel. And of course, Jerusalem and the holy sites in Bethlehem, that was all in Jordanian territory, or at least East Jerusalem was. And so because of pressure, and that time Israel did not have diplomatic relations with the Vatican, finally it was decided that the Pope would also come to visit Israel. It was decided that Megiddo would be the crossover point. And at Megiddo, the United States made it was inappropriate for the Pope to travel on a donkey path, called the West Side Highway, right? Just a donkey path from the time of Ram Avinu. So they got America to build a three-lane highway. Three-lane highway meaning one road going this way, one road going oncoming traffic, and one lane in the middle to switch lanes to ensure the maximum amount of fatalities, because there's one lane shared by both sides of traffic. And this is, to this day, there's a sign, this is paid for as a gift for the American people. Don't ask me, my taxpayer money went for it, but they built this road for the Pope so he could come travel in class from Megiddo to come to Jerusalem. And then comes the June 67 war, the Six-Day War. And Israeli tank units are able to get on this road and encircle the Arab forces in Jenin, which hastens the victory. Now, if you'd ask someone, why did they build that road? You say they built it for the Pope. He said, no, you understand now that they built it so that Israel could be liberated from the Arab armies. Hakol b'shvil Yisrael. This is a lesson of Rav Kamenetz taught all the time. Hakol b'shvil Yisrael. The Kedusha that emanated from the temple affected every person. To this day, the shreed of Beis HaMikdash, the remnant of the Beis HaMikdash still impacts and affects people. Now that era of Bais Rishon, when Klai Yisrael was at its optimum, was a very short period. There was a time, the reign of Shlomo HaMelech, we had the Beis HaMikdash, we could mekayim all Taryag mitzvahs, all 613 mitzvahs. That period of perfection was a very short period, very ephemeral period. And that should be a critical focus of Tisha B'Av. The world is 5,768 years old. The Torah was given in the year 2,448. Therefore, it's been almost 3,000 years since the Kabbalah Torah, and it was less than half a century we had perfection. And this shows you from a historic perspective how much was missing and how much we're lacking from what God wants from us. When we say we want to bring Mashiach, what that really means is we want to bring back the time we had of the epoch of Shlomo HaMelech together with the 10 Lashvatim. Kol Rafei Sigur Ben HaMetzarim. This is the time now in 3 weeks when our prayers are more effective and more efficacious. That explains the sharpness of the morning. Many nations have suffered destruction, but they don't continue to mourn. The Aztecs, the Incas, the Tatars, they're gone. And no one's mourning their loss. Rashi says in Parshas Vayeshev, "Ein adam mekabel tanchum al achai v'sav shemes. Shemes nigzer shishkach min alev v'lo achai." We know with Yaakov regarding Yaakov, even though he was told about evidence that Yosef was dead, he continued to mourn for him because there's a gzera on the heart. As long as someone is still alive, the mourning is still there. Once someone is dead, then the mourning is diminished and diminished. This is a wonderful analogy for the situation with the Beis HaMikdash. Wonderful analogy. God has programmed me inside you to forget that which is over. The other nations, the Aztecs, the Incas, the Tatars, the Moors, they understand that what's been destroyed is final. But the collective soul of Klai Yisrael knows that we have yet to achieve our former glory. We know it. We know it in our heart and our soul that we're missing something. The well-known story that a boy was flying a kite on a very foggy day, very cloudy day. And he's flying a kite and this old man goes by and says, "Little boy, what are you doing?" He said, "I have a kite." He said, "You do not." He said, "Sure I do. It's up there." He said, "Don't be silly. There's nothing there." He said, "You can't see it, but it's there." He said, "I'm telling you that you don't be a silly boy. There's nothing there." He said, "But I feel it. I feel the tug." We don't see God, but we know. We feel that tug in the heart. We know it's there. We know it's there. Napoleon, his custom was is that when he would conquer a town or come to a new region, he would dress up on the people of the area and see from their perspective how things looked. Story goes, he came to some community and he followed the Jews. They were all going in one direction. He followed them. He walked into the synagogue and everyone's sitting on the floor and there's candlelight. He said, "What in the world is going on over here?" He said, "Don't you know?" He said, "What?" He said, "Tonight is Tisha B'Av. And we're commemorating a temple that was destroyed over 1,000 years ago. And that's what we're sitting on the floor commemorating." He said, "If the people can mourn what happened so many years earlier and feel it today and sit like mourners on the floor, I know this nation will have a temple destroyed." Even Napoleon understood that. And after so many Tisha B'Avs and 9 days and 3 weeks, do we truly feel that we're missing? Do we feel that we're missing something, that we're missing the glory? You know, what do we feel is missing? What's missing for us? You go to the store, you want to buy something on sale, we're missing it. It's gone. You know, the sale item is gone. You're rushing to go somewhere and you get a red light, you missed the light. You want to get to the wedding, you want to get to the shmorg, to the serious eating, and you're caught in traffic and you miss the shmorg. I missed it. We are bereft of the Beis HaMikdash. We are bereft of the universal knowledge, Ki Hashem Hu Elokim, and that sense is not missing. I shall never forget singing of Shlomo Zalman and Chuppah. And after they broke the glass, and people would sing Imeshkechei Yerushalayim, people go over afterwards, going, "Mazel, mazel," and he was still thinking, "Yerushalayim is destroyed." And he's in his cogitations. And I can't tell you I saw him crying, but I definitely saw sadness. And I can tell you this with all my, I see this every single week. Rabbi Nevinsal, late at night when he leaves the Shivat HaKotel, he looks out the window and sees the bias and the what remains of the, he sees the Kotel and the, where the dome of, is there, and he's looking there, and I see every night tears coming down his cheeks. takes a sense of like Shlomo Zalman, like Rabbi Victor Nevinzal, to realize that we're truly missing, and he cries when he thinks about it. Today would be an appropriate time, as we approach the 3 weeks, to cultivate in our soul what we're missing, to cry out. If you're missing something, then you'll spend every effort and energy to replace it. If chalila chalila, you're missing a child, nothing in the world has any meaning until that child is located. That's the behavior of tzaddikim, who said tikkun chatzos. I believe you're looking at har bayis, but this is far from our minds. Vayivku balayla ahu, they cried that night. Eretz ochel, and they cried that night. That was the night of Tisha B'Av. They had spoken mad about the land. They didn't realize what a beautiful land it was. They got sashkachas on the land. Mereshu shana, achrish shana. And they said, it's an Eretz ochel shashveh. God did them the greatest of all favors. Instead of the giants in the land seeing these Lilliputian spies spying out the land, what God did was he had them in their graveyards all day long burying their dead. And they said, it's a land, look at everybody's in the cemetery. Eretz ochel shashveh, say the mekubalim, a nice interpretation. Yoshveha from the word yoshev, to sit. It's a land which devours those that sit. Perestrel demands constant dynamic, perpetual ascent, going higher and higher. If you want to vegetate, that'll work in New York and Chicago and Los Angeles and Miami and Denver. But Perestrel demands constant ascent. Otherwise, you sink. You can't remain parved. You can't just tread water. The Meravim were blinded to the Hashkach of God. We are in the right position to cultivate the proper perspective, for that's our heritage. All those that lay claim to Jerusalem, Richard the Lionhearted, Titus, Godfrey Bouillon, the Crusader, Saladin the Marauder, they all claimed to Jerusalem and said it was theirs. When the Moors were driven out of Spain and left the land for good, they never came back. When we were driven out of Israel, Israel remained in our hearts. We pray to it 3 times a day, we mourn for it, we fast for it. Became part of us. We know that something is missing. And as we live through the epoch, the tear-stained pages of Jewish history, we realize that God, even though He's spitting us, He loves us as a father. That's why it's called Chodesh Av. It's the month of father. This month of tragedy is the month that we recognize God as our father, and knowing that God is behind it all, that's Aleph base. That's the very beginning. It's ABCs. The Brisker Rav said to his Talmidim, how do you spell Shivtecha Umishantecha Hei Ma Yenachemuni? Shivtecha Umishantecha Hei Ma Yenachemuni? These things will console me. He spelled Shivtecha with a tough. He said, no, Shivtecha is with a tet. It says, your rod, that is my consolation. How is God's rod? Because a loving father will beat a child to make sure he goes the right way. He doesn't ignore the child. He wants to repair the child. And we recognize that even though God has made us suffer, it's for our own good. He cares for us. It's Av. That's understanding God as the Father. And therefore, only when we truly miss that which we have lost can we look forward to the day, like those Talmidim Rebbe Kiva, heralding the news of He gives my Krishma Shal Shachris, it's enough of the Krishma of Arvis, the darkness, the light, the hardship, the suffering, the terrorists, the explosions, the suicide bombers, the anti-Semitism, enough, Kanuk Shine. We appeal to God that on this Tisha B'Av Mir Tashem will herald the arrival of Mashiach, those days will be over, and we can have the arrival of the Gizman Shal Krishma Shal Shachris of hope and anticipation. We hope for today we'll have the hope and the look. The perspective of the Chosem Lublin. Chosem Lublin was the great giants of Chassidus, a Talmud of, I think he was the Talmud of the Yir HaKadosh. The Chosem Lublin, when he came to Lublin, it was a joke. In Lublin was Israel Horowitz, whose nickname was, it sounds in Yiddish wonderful, in Yiddish, in American, in English it sounds a little bit inappropriate. He's called the Eyes in the Cup, the Iron Head. Not as an insult, but he was such a stark cup, such a genius, called the Eyes in the Cup. So when the Eyes in the Cup, because the Eyes in the Cup, Israel Horowitz was in Lublin, it was a bedrock of the Misnag, the opponents to Hasidus. Ken's young Rebbe, the Chosem Lublin, said, what are you doing here in town like this now? He was called the Chose. In English, they call the Seer of Lublin. It doesn't work. They call him the Seer, or even they call him the Chose. He was the Chayzem Lublin, he was the seer, meaning when he was 11 years old, he already made up that he didn't want to do anything that was inappropriate, and he put a linen cloth over his eyes, and that linen cloth affected and caused disease to his right eye, which became enlarged and inflamed. And it was said through that diseased eye, he could see through the souls of all the Jews in Galicia. Hence he's called the Chazi. He could see through. He was a Chazi Lublin. And it was a joke. You come into the town of the eyes in the cup, a little rebbe, and the eyes in the cup saying, "What are you doing here? You're a little rebbe. I'm wiser, more erudite, and provident, and judicious, and more learned and erudite." And the Chazi Lublin said, "You're absolutely right." He went to the Chazi and said, "Why are you coming to me?" He didn't have any Chazi, a handful. He said, "Why are you coming to me?" In times, the Chazi is the eyes in the cup, who's so learned and scholarly and erudite and provident and judicious. He said, "Look how modest our master is." And even more people came, Talmidim of the Chazi Lublin. And the Chassidus is growing and growing. And so the eyes in the cup called him over and said, "You know something? This is not working. Tell you, Chassidim, really, you're wiser, you're more clever, you're a bigger Talmud Chacham." Chazi said, "What can I do? Allah Shekhar, I can't do. I can't say something which isn't true. That I can't do." When the Chazi Lublin was on his deathbed, his children came from far and wide to be at his side. He passed away, his soul was summoned to Yeshiva Shalmala, and they all divided the Yerusha. I don't mean stocks and bonds and magic wands. It was there were no portfolios. All it was memorabilia. One son got the Shtreimel, one son got the Bekesha, one son got the Talis. And one child got the clock on the wall. So they got it from Shimon. Everybody wished that everyone they should meet on a happier occasion. They went out to Verspritz to spread the message of Chassidus. And a son who got his Yerush, the clock, and in his direction where he was going, a terrible storm erupted. He checked in, pardon the pun, at an inn. He checked in at the inn, and the storm did not abate. One night, two nights, three nights, four nights. After 4 days, he had no money to pay for his lodging. The only thing he could do was give the innkeeper the clock from his father to Chazi Lublin. 2 years later, two Jews checked in at the inn. They put their suitcases down, and the key was handed on the counter. They said, "Hey, why, that's the clock of the Chazi Lublin." And the innkeeper said, How do you know? He said, "Because it's simple. Every clock in the world chimes out 1 hour closer to death. And this clock is chiming out 1 hour closer to the Geula. When we yitain, we'll have that kind of perspective of the Chazi, and we'll have the fulfillment and reinstatement of all that we are missing."